What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everybody, if you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. That makes this Stuff You Should Know Express Edition.
Monday morning edition.
It's the Chili's to go edition.
I think Monday mornings are my favorite time to record.
Really?
Are you kidding me? It's the worst of the worst.
So you were lying.
I was lying.
I gotcha.
Oh, wait. Before we get into this, can we give a quick Kiva shout-out?
We totally should. Thanks to Glenn for emailing us to be like, hey, busy movie star guys, we need you to pay attention again.
Glenn of the Glenn and Sonias.
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, guys. So, Chuck, we have reached the $700,000 mark in loans.
So great.
From our Stuff You Should Know Kiva team, kiva.org/team/stuff-you-should-know. It's a micro lending organization where you loan in increments of $25 to people who use it to basically keep their businesses going, start new business, buy inventory, whatever.
Yep.
And it's basically global peace through capitalism.
It's neato torpedo, and we support it.
And not only that, not only did we hit the $700,000 mark, we just celebrated our second anniversary. We did it in like 2 years.
That is nuts. So we're on track from Glenn is the uber math genius of this, heading this up.
Right.
I think he says we're on track to hit our $750,000 goal in like mid-November.
Yeah. And the original goal was to hit it by the end of the year. So
crazy.
Yeah. The juggernaut that is Team SYSK on Kiva rolls on. So congratulations
to
you guys. 800,000.
No, buddy. $1,000,000.
I know. I can't even wrap my mind around that. Do you remember how all this started?
Yeah. That's a simple podcast.
Yeah.
It takes a village.
So way to go, everybody on our Kiva team. And we're not exclusive. Our Kiva team is very open and friendly. Again, if you want to go join, it's kiva.org/team/stuff-you-should-know, right?
All right, back to denial.
Okay, so denial. Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of an ancient man-eating crocodile named Gustav?
Yeah, man. I watched a video on him.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
He is enormous and scary.
He's pretty creepy looking.
So for those of you who aren't in the know like Chuck, let me tell you a little bit about Gustav. He's, 20 feet long, Chuck?
6 meters.
Okay.
Yeah.
He weighs a ton.
He does weigh a ton.
Which is, what, more than 2,000 pounds these days, isn't it?
It's a ton.
and he's about 60 years old, they think, which is pretty substantial because wild crocodiles, he's a Nile crocodile, wild crocodiles live to about 45.
Yeah, I think he's closer to 70 now, actually.
Yeah, that's right, because he was about 60 in 2004.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's pushing 70, and he is very old, and he also has a real taste for humans.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is true. I think there's a lot of legend built up too, though.
Well, there's this guy, this hunter, of him. His last name is Faye. What's his first name, Chuck?
Faye Ray?
No, his first name is, Patrice Faye.
Yeah, he was the documentary that I watched.
Right.
When he tried to catch him.
He seems to be something of a controversial figure, and, he's a bit of a Captain Ahab, and Gustav is his, Queequeg.
Yes.
At least. Anyway, the point is I would say I think about 300 people are attributed to dying to Gustav.
Yeah, and some legend has it that he sometimes won't even eat you. He'll just kill you, which that makes me think, you know, that's probably not true.
Right, he kills for sport or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So Gustav has been on the loose in Burundi for a long time, and he is a Nile crocodile, and he's in Burundi because the Nile actually flows partially through Burundi,
which is
the whole reason I brought up Gustav in the first place.
It's a great way to start.
It was okay. You know much about the Nile?
A little bit. I know a thing or two.
Do you?
Uh-huh. It is just a river in Egypt.
But it's not just in Egypt. So
true.
If you have a problem with the title, stop emailing because we know what we're talking about.
It's in, technically, if you want to know, it's in Uganda, Sudan, Egypt, Zaire, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Ethiopia, and the aforementioned Burundi.
Yes. And throughout all those countries, the Nile, it gets fairly wide. I think it's up to 10 kilometers wide at its widest point.
10 clicks?
Yes.
I didn't see the width. That's good to know.
But 10 kilometers, that's a substantial width for a river.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's over 5 miles wide.
Wow.
So, which is kind of wide, but at the same time, for flowing through 10 countries, it's still fairly narrow compared to its length. Yet, about 370 million people depend on the Nile to survive.
And have for a long time, not that many people.
A very long time. As a matter of fact, in Ethiopia, where one of the Nile's headwaters are, it's considered the cradle of the Kush people, which is the black race, I guess. And possibly the human race. It's the cradle of the human race.
I've heard that.
But don't tell the Aryan Brotherhood because they will be mad.
Yeah. They get mad about everything.
Yeah, they do.
Humorless, Josh.
So tell us some more about the Nile. So, like, there's some amazing facts. It is a river.
It is.
But it's an amazing river. Yeah. And it's not even the longest river, is it?
No, the Amazon generally is quoted as a little bit longer by, I think they said the most recent expedition. They found out, and they used advanced mapping equipment.
Right, which is advanced.
To find out that the Nile's about 4,175 miles long.
6,719 kilometers.
And the Amazon clocks it, and we're going to do an Amazon show too, at 4,225.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 65 miles longer.
Yeah.
And I think that the new Nile, as we'll call it, includes the new headwaters south of Lake Victoria. Is that what they determined? Because they used to say it was originated in Lake Victoria.
Yeah.
But now it's south a little bit, right?
There was a guy, that was controversial. When the guy came up, there was a guy named John Hanning Speke, and he was an English explorer who lived to 1864. And before his death, he went on an expedition to Africa and went off by himself. His co-expedition leader got injured, so he went off by himself.
Like Gustav?
And found, I don't think it was
Gustav's
Gustav.
Father.
Right. And he found Lake Victoria and said, well, this has got to be the Nile. And
look at this big lake. Must be the, the headwaters.
And there was this big public debate over whether it was real or not. And between the guy who was injured and not on the expedition and Speke.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally Speke was like, fine, you know what? Let's go back. So we went back and they found the place where the Nile exits Lake Victoria. So Lake Victoria has traditionally been the source of the Nile, but they found that actually, no, there's some headwaters somewhere in some forest in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And you say that it's south of Lake Victoria, which is crazy, Chuck, because that means that the Nile flows south to north.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, I thought that was so strange because I thought south meant lower. And it's just not the case. In Africa, the high land is south.
Right.
And so it just flows
toward the equator
with gravity, like it should.
Yeah.
Toward the equator.
Never had a cavity.
Not one.
So, that is kind of big news, though, that the headwaters, the source of the Nile, it has changed. I like how it's somewhere deep in a forest in Rwanda. That's pretty cool. It's fairly mysterious.
It is.
So it still has a mysterious origin. It's always had this kind of mysterious, dark Africa vibe to it, the Nile has.
Sure. So, Josh, let's talk about the tributaries. If you're going to talk about the Nile, you got to talk about the fact that there's the White Nile and there's the Blue Nile. The White is the newest source south of Lake Victoria is the White Nile. Easiest to navigate. It's the longer section, but actually has less water.
Yeah.
feeds less water.
So we're going to talk about how the Nile like raises and lowers in a little bit, but it's the White Nile that's responsible for that.
Yeah, and it's lightish gray in color with the sediment, which is why they call it the White Nile. Mm-hmm. The Blue Nile is very sparkly blue,
right,
in its origins in the Ethiopian mountains, and provides about 2/3 of the water to the river, and then it turns darker as it goes. Like in the Sudan, things get dark.
The Blue Nile.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also another tributary. That's the two largest tributaries, the Blue Nile and the White Nile.
Mm-hmm.
I also found out that after the Nile exits a lake, like it comes out of Lake Victoria, that's called the Victoria Nile. Then it gets to Lake Albert.
Oh, yeah?
Victoria's lover boy.
Sure.
And then after it exits that, it's the Albert Nile. So it's named kind of based on where it is in any given part in time.
Gotcha.
But the third major tributary, the Atbara River, which comes out of the eastern portion of Sudan, is actually, they think it's the original source of the Nile.
Oh, really?
The Nile's about 30 million years old from the tertiary period.
Wow.
But they think that was the original source, and other rivers started coming out and joining together, and now it forms the huge, massive Nile.
Well, it goes through a lot of twists and turns on the way, and we'll talk about a couple of those, but let's go ahead and just tell you the ending now. Spoiler alert. It splits again in Egypt into the Damietta, which is on the east side,
mm-hmm.
Or is that on the west?
Damietta is on the west, the west.
Damietta is on the east, Rosetta is on the west. I had it right to begin with.
I had it right one of those times.
And that, and then, you know, it splits into two main things, but it's really a fan of many, many little fingers that all spill out into the Mediterranean Sea.
Right. But did you notice what those two things were called, the Damietta and the Rosetta? They were called distributaries, right? You have tributaries coming in, distributaries.
I was like, distribute?
Yeah. That's where the word distribute comes from.
It's crazy.
What's sad is I was like, wow, there's the fact of the podcast.
Really? That was it.
Yeah.
I like all the canal stuff.
Do you?
I mean, it's not the fact, but I just thought that was the coolest stuff.
Yeah.
How they made it work for them.
Yeah. So as the Nile's flowing from south to north, it's wide, it flows, but I mean, like, you're not going to get thrown out of a kayak on it until you get to Aswan, right? Once you get to Aswan, there's six cataracts after that between Aswan and the Nile Delta. And these cataracts are basically rapids.
Yeah, I wonder how harsh.
Nile, like,
really, really
unnavigable.
Harsh?
You're
really?
In a boat, like, okay, you got to get out and put your boat on a trailer and drive around and then get back in.
What do you call that?
Unnavigable.
Nah,
Innavigable.
There's a word for that when you have to pull your canoe out and do some walking. Besides, sucks.
Yeah, bummer.
Bummer.
I think is what it's called.
I'm just, Monday morning, Friday afternoon, I would have that word at my ready.
I'm sure that people have hit these rapids before, but I mean, you're talking not just, this isn't, you know, like a normal river or creek. This is the Nile hitting rapids.
Right.
So
sure.
There's six of those, and then you get to the Delta, and it calms down again.
It's the longest kiss in history. That's what they call it, the Arab poets. Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
Like when they meet, that's the kiss.
Huh. At Khartoum?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is very nice.
I thought that was very poetic, which is, I guess, why poets wrote it. Right? Okay.
So, you want to hear a few more stats? I actually have a
sure.
couple stats.
Let's hear it.
Just a couple more things. If you live on the Nile and you're a member of a certain ethnic group, a few ethnic groups,
mm-hmm.
Especially in Sudan, you're described as Nilotic.
I like that.
Caucasian.
Sure.
You're Nilotic.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to measure the amount of water that passes down the Nile every day at its peak,
okay,
you would come up with 79,251,615,372 U.S. gallons, which is 300 million cubic meters of water every day.
Wow.
And if you wanted to get to the root of the name of the Nile, Nilios is Greek for, are you ready for this?
Big
this
river?
River valley.
That's a little disappointing.
It was a little disappointing. I thought so, too.
Sometimes it just makes too much sense.
So there's a certain culture of people that grew up along the Nile. We mentioned the Kush people from Ethiopia.
Yeah.
But they get a lot less press than their neighbors to the west, the ancient Egyptians.
Yes, this is after the Great Bend, north of the Great Bend.
Yeah. We left out the Great Bend.
Well, the Great Bend is interesting because it literally runs east to west for a little while, then bends back and runs the other way.
Yeah, it's going just due north, and then it cuts.
It's a switchback, you would call that if you were a hiker.
Yeah, and they found out finally, like, this has perplexed people who've navigated the river and mapped it, and they're like, what is this?
Yeah.
It's not supposed to do this, because it actually does it in one of the driest points of Earth, on Earth.
The whole area around it is dry, too. That's worth pointing out, is it's in the middle of some serious, serious sand.
Well, it depends on what part you're at. It goes through a lot of different climates.
Well, that's true.
But when it hits the Great Bend, it's like in the middle of the Sahara Desert.
Yeah.
And it should just keep going north, but it didn't. So they found in, I think, 1994 through satellite photos, they found that there's this ancient riverbed that it did used to go straight. Something happened. They estimate between 10,000 and 1 million years ago, something happened.
Yeah.
And now it takes this bend. No one knows what happened.
Oh, they don't have
Nile.
Any theory on that.
It just ain't the same since then, though.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was superstitious in nature. If, like, some person stood and said, halt, to the Nile, and it went around him.
I don't think so. I think it was the other way around. I think the Nile just was kind of like,
did its thing.
We're your boss.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I mentioned that a lot of the northern part, especially in Egypt, is in the middle of serious sand. And that sand is what protected the Nile and the Nile River Basin and the people there. Because it was, you know, you couldn't just like walk over there and attack them. You were lucky to make it through the desert to get to the Nile.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It served as a natural protection plan.
I didn't realize that. That walls, makes a lot of
almost.
Sense, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you know about ancient Egypt, of course. There were several kingdoms, mm-hmm. each of which collapsed.
Yeah. Very advanced peoples, though.
They were. One of the cool things, we talked about the Nile rising and falling every year. The Blue Nile is steady, slow and steady, coming out of the Ethiopian highlands. And it's the White Nile coming out of Rwanda and through Lake Victoria, and through Sudan, that is subject to fluctuations because there's heavy rainfall in Rwanda.
There's also, I saw heavy rain in the Ethiopian highlands too, though.
There is, but for some reason the Nile stays yeah. steady. The Blue Nile coming out of Ethiopia stays steady.
And snow melting too is another big reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think what it is maybe
snow
it rains,
in Africa.
It rains on one during one part of the year, and then the snow melt happens in another.
Yeah,
and it equals basically just an equal volume coming out.
Okay.
So in on the White Nile, it's subject to wild fluctuation, and it drops down. It raises up to 20 feet at its highest point.
That is the secret.
And the ancient Egyptians were pretty smart about capturing this stuff. They could capture the water in canals and basins, so much so that they would have all the water they needed for next year's crops. They could capture all the water they needed for next year's crops through the Nile.
That's right. Specifically, Josh, the river is at its lowest in May. Mm-hmm. It's at its highest in September. So between May and September, there's something called the rise, which is the inundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the fall, which is the relinquishment. Happens around October is when it starts to fall. And during that time where it rises so much, like you said, they would capture this water. It would flood the sand there. And when it receded, it would leave this mud, mm-hmm. this awesome, rich, fertile silt.
Yeah.
They would dry that out for about a week, and then they would start a plant.
That's why the Nile Delta is so lush. It's that annual, you know, bringing of the silt.
That's that changed the history of the world.
It did,
and definitely Africa.
And apparently, the silt is between 50 and 100 feet deep, and it's just this black, rich, nutrient-rich soil that you could grow rocks in. Yeah,
that's oil.
Yeah,
sorry,
but still, I know what you meant.
Sure.
Like you said, it changed the history of the world, and it was problematic. It was a gift as well as a curse, because it would not only bring the silt, sometimes it would bring way too much water.
Yeah, sure.
It would ruin, it would come in at the wrong time, and they couldn't harvest fast enough.
Yeah, what the Nile giveth, it taketh away.
Right, exactly. So, to prevent the flooding and to allow for more settlement, because, you know, you need to pack people in there. As a matter of fact, the Nile is one of the most densely populated areas on Earth, right?
Yeah, there's a stat here somewhere.
I think it's like 3,280 people per square mile. Yeah, which is... yes.
That's dense, my friend.
It is very dense.
And it was always that dense. Or not that dense, but it's always been very dense with people, because that was the lifeblood.
Right.
As they say.
So when you have a bunch of people, you need to settle them where you can, and you can't just let the Nile flood everybody every year and then rebuild.
Yeah.
So what they did is they started building a system of dams, and they started controlling the Nile a little more so they can keep the flooding in check.
Yeah.
They've got plenty of water for irrigation, but they're losing out on the sediment.
Yeah, it reduced the fertility some, so they started using fertilizer. And they kind of rolled with the punches over the years, from what I gathered. Building the dams, and they realized that saved the land from being flooded too much, but it also, they said, well, we got to start using fertilizer now.
They did. It was part of the Green Revolution, I think. So it's kind of like, yeah, we've got all this fertilizer, but now we're screwing up the land two different ways. It's just another example of humans controlling nature and shooting themselves in the foot, you know?
Yeah, but the good news is, though, that through their control and through this silt and the flooding, it allowed for a lot of kind of crops that you wouldn't think you would be able to grow out there,
mm-hmm.
like wheat and barley.
Right.
I think these days, what do they grow? Cotton even? Sorghum?
Well, Egyptian cotton.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah, it's very, very sought after.
What kind of thread count you go with these days?
Oh, the higher the better.
You know what I've just recently learned is the higher actually means heavier, too. So if you go out and get like a 1,000 thread count sheet,
yeah.
You might not be getting what you're looking for, because it might feel more like a blanket.
Right. It depends on what type of fabric they're using.
Yeah, exactly. It's all in the weave.
It is. And also, you have to look out for, you definitely get what you pay for. If you find like 600 thread count sheets for like $20.
On the internet, yeah.
The reason why, it is 600 thread count, but they're counting each of the three strands of thread. So rather than a single thread counting, you know, 600 times, it's one thread divided into the three strands that make up that single thread.
So it's really
200. 200 thread count sheets.
Because I've seen those on the internet, you know, 600 thread count for 1995.
Right. And then you, like, pull it up over you and you get, like, a rash. You might as well sleep in a potato sack or something.
You get the Nile rash.
Yeah. So, Chuck, we talked about dams. I did a little extra research. It turns out that the Nile connects 9 countries, and it connects them geopolitically as well as just geologically, geographically.
Yes.
And apparently Egypt and Sudan like to make agreements over water use for the Nile. And this has been going on for a really long time. It used to be Egypt and Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And Egypt would occasionally accuse Ethiopia of, you know, controlling the Nile and keeping the water to themselves.
Sure.
Which they had no way of doing.
Right.
And then every once in a while, Ethiopia would threaten to do that, and Egypt would be like, okay, all right, let's talk this out.
We're going to keep all the water.
Right. Then it changed between Egypt and Sudan, and those are still two of the biggest players now. So Egypt has a really long history of blocking projects that would kind of equitably distribute the Nile waters.
Yeah.
And you remember in 1984-85, Ethiopia had this horrible famine. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
But the Nile was just fine. They just hadn't figured out, or they weren't using it to irrigate properly. And the world didn't really care that much at first. It took a little while to
really. I remember it being a big deal.
It took a while.
It was a big deal before I found out about it. In other words,
yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
I have a little fact of the show for me is to measure the recession and the rising of the river.
Mm-hmm.
They used a staircase. They built a staircase down into the river, and literally just marked it. It was called a nilometer,
mm-hmm.
and they just marked what stair it was on from time to time. Pretty basic.
It is basic, but
because you can't have a big pole, you know, you can't stick a big pole down.
How old are those stairs?
Oh, I don't know if they're. I don't think they're still around.
Oh, really? Oh, that was ancient Egypt.
Oh, yeah,
the Old Kingdom.
Now they just measure it with advanced equipment. Sonar.
Right. Advanced mapping equipment.
Advanced mapping equipment.
So, what else? Do you want to talk some more about some animals?
Sure. The Nile is well known to house crocodiles. The Nile crocodile is a fish eater for the most part.
I didn't know that.
Goats or chickens and whatever happens to be lurking nearby.
Yeah, goats I did know.
Yeah.
Fish I didn't think of.
But they do attack humans. They say roughly 200 human deaths per year thanks to the crocodile. And Gustav, that we mentioned earlier, he's large for a Nile crocodile, but it's not like he's some freak of nature. I mean, there are plenty of crocodiles that get to be 20 feet in length.
Well, the saltwater crocodiles tend to grow larger.
So he's just big for the area, and he's old as the hills. So that gave him the spooky legend.
He's as old as a 70-year-old hill.
Yeah, 67-year-old
hill. Made by some neighborhood kids.
And then hippopotamus. The hippopotamus doesn't live in the Nile anymore. And I didn't find why. They're not native to the area.
No, they don't live in Egypt.
Oh, they live further south.
They live on the Nile, but they hang around Sudan more now.
Egypt gets all the press.
But they used to be around Egypt. I'm not sure exactly why they left.
Well, probably because the crocodiles.
Yeah,
although those crocodiles are everywhere.
Yeah.
But they would eat hippos, even though they're not supposed to. And the hippos were pretty fearsome in their own right.
Yeah, they like to mess up crops, run over people. I mean, we think of them as very lovable, hungry, hungry hippos.
Sure.
But yeah, you don't really want to get too close to them because, well, it's like an elephant. An elephant's not going to, like, necessarily mean to kill you. If it means to kill you, you're dead.
Sure.
But it can still kill you just by you being in its way.
Right.
So you don't want to get too close to the hippopotami. Okay?
What about insects, Josh?
Who cares?
The CDC, apparently they've gotten the malaria pretty well in check there, so you don't even have to get vaccinated any longer.
Yeah.
If you travel to that area.
If you're going to the city, if you're on an expedition on the Nile, you're probably going to need to go ahead and get the malaria inoculation.
Even if they didn't recommend it, I would get it.
Yeah.
But they do recommend that, you know, if you're traveling there, to take the standard anti-diarrhea stuff, iodine tablets, water purification, all the good stuff that you're going to need to stay alive.
Yeah, and to keep from pooping your skeleton out like that guy said.
Who said that?
One of the listeners, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. What else, Josh? The Nile today, still booming, and you know the way they farm there today is still really similar to the way they did it back in the day.
Yeah,
like I saw video from last week of, you know, the oxen pulling the stuff right on the banks of the Nile.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
That is cool. The Arab Spring that led to the revolt in Egypt. You know, Egypt and Sudan are the two big players with water now.
Yeah.
To get around that, a bunch of other countries, some of the smaller countries, started the Nile Basin Initiative, which is basically like trying to figure out how to do it on their own without depending on Egypt.
Right, right.
And Egypt kept going around and blocking their projects.
Really?
Yeah, however they could, because you need money for it. These are countries that, you know, have just enough infrastructure to keep their people going.
Sure.
So a new project that's going to really develop the country, they need some money for it. So Egypt would go to the World Bank and be like, you don't want to do that. So now that there's like a leadership vacuum in Egypt, people are hopeful and worried because Egypt still has, you know, commitments to water agreements. And it's kind of up in the air at this point, like how it's going to go. Are they going to get stingier? Or are they going to get, you know, better? Who knows?
Interesting. I got one more stat for you.
What?
You talked about how densely populated it is.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the Nile River Basin only makes up 5% of Egypt's landmass, 95% of the population lives along the Nile.
Uh-huh. And that's just in Egypt.
It's nuts.
It is.
But necessary.
Yeah. And the Nile River Delta itself, not just the Nile, but the Delta is so significant that the ancient Egyptians worshipped the Delta as a god. Hapi, H-A-P-I,
uh-huh.
Who's represented by a frog.
Really?
Yep.
Hapi the Delta frog?
Yeah.
And despite the fact that they do grow things like cotton and wheat and sugarcane there and citrus fruits, there's still a lot of poor people doing the farming. It hasn't led to like this abundance of riches as farmers.
No.
It's pretty sad.
I don't know what the problem is either.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, are they exporting tons of this stuff or is it mainly for their use? I wonder.
I don't know.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jerry's laughing at us. They're also getting into hydroelectric power, which that could change things.
Well, the Aswan Dam.
Yeah.
I think it's been producing power for a while. It opened in 1970.
Well, they're getting more and more into it these days, too, like more hydroelectric power, more dams.
It's huge. So it's like 364 feet tall above the river.
What?
And it's 12,000 feet wide.
Wow.
That's an enormous dam.
That is big.
Took 11 years to build.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that compare to the Hoover Dam and generation of power, I wonder? I keep asking for stats we don't have.
I hate Monday morning.
You got anything else?
No, I wish I did, but I don't.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and this one we're going to chalk up to, if you want to know the entire world, we have to explain the Nile eventually, so that's what we did.
We're going
to
kill the Amazon River. Not literally kill it. Nobody can kill
it. We're going to shut it off.
Got anything else?
No. I should be asking you that. Chuck, you got anything else?
I don't.
Okay. Well, if you want to learn more about the Nile, you can type in Nile, N-I-L-E, in the search bar at howstuffworks.com, which means it's time for listener mail.
Josh, you know that we read our email emails occasionally from our younger listeners?
Yes, I do.
Because we like cute kids, and we like them learning stuff, and we like to be role models as far as our show goes to these kids.
That's a good caveat.
This comes from a listener from Minnesota.
Okay. You can't say it like that, though.
I am Eli of Lindstrom, Minnesota. It's a small town located on the nose of Wisconsin.
Okay.
Which is why I said that. I'm 14 years old and have been listening to your podcast for about 6 months. I really like it a lot. It is straight to the point, yet it isn't so facty. You got that right. Unlike Radiolab. But I really enjoy your sense of personality you add. You guys don't sound like robots. I was having an anger attack when I heard the Underground Railroad podcast. That lady wouldn't know real genius if it hit her in the eardrums. Harsh words.
Wow.
Your topics include a variety of pop culture, science, psychology, and some downright obscure ones. I listen to you on the lawnmower, along with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and How to Do Everything. I haven't heard of that one. Sounds suspiciously like our own.
Like Catholic stuff you should know?
Yeah, exactly. One of the people who turned me on to your podcast is my scoutmaster, Dana. He and I have very heated arguments and discussions about certain topics on our way to and from Boy Scout camp. Me, being the senior patrol leader, need to have a certain connection with the scoutmaster in order for things to run smoothly. I appreciate what you guys are doing for me, and I hope that you write back. I would get all warm and fuzzy if you went as far as to read this on the air, and Dana would not believe it. I hope you have a wonderful fall. Sincerely, Eli from Minnesota.
Thanks a lot, Eli.
And Dana, take that.
Yeah, I think Eli just won up to you, Dana.
Yep, so you owe him a s'more.
Recover for that, from that. Yeah. I just had s'mores the other day. You, me, and I are into s'mores right now.
You build a fire? How do you do it?
In the oven. Hey, dude, I don't have like a backyard to have a fire in and set it on fire.
You got
set
a little yard.
City on fire.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you have a good s'more story, or how about this? If you have a good autumn treat recipe, we're in the market. We want it. Okay.
A good pumpkin pie, perhaps?
Something like that. Something that I haven't heard of. Good autumn cocktail recipe is always appreciated as well.
I had a nice autumn beer the other night. The Dogfish Head pumpkin.
Yeah, you've been talking about that ever since, too.
I just had it two nights ago, so what are you talking about?
No, you didn't, because this is like the third time you've mentioned
Dude,
it.
Dude, I had it two nights ago.
Yeah, whatever.
You're thinking of your other friend Chuck.
No, I think... Well, then Chad had one.
Okay.
Okay, so if you have a good recipe of some sort for an autumn treat, we want to hear it. You can tweet it to us, but it better be short. That's SYSK Podcast is our Twitter handle. On Facebook, we're at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can totally email us.
Totally.
At stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.